muted.
Of the Pack Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signing.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Hello, is this thing on? Yes, it is, and we are back. Pulse of the Pack once again, back from a summer hibernation and ready to talk Packers football. I am Jacob Westendorf, your host, roasted from a weekend in the sun, but it was a good weekend. My baseball team got a big win yesterday, and I had the honor of coaching the All-Star game today because of the success we had last year. It was the first time I'd ever gotten to do that, so it was a fun experience for me, and we won both of those games today as well in dramatic fashion. A two-run home run in the last inning wins the game for us. But that's enough about that. Joined with me, as always, is Minnesota's finest, Jason Perrone. Jason, it's been a while. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Is there another Jason Perrone that's in Minnesota that's Minnesota's finest? Because I know you ain't talking about me.
No. Since it's been a while, I suppose I can be nice to you. And, yes, I am talking about you. Hope you enjoyed your Father's Day. I believe this is your second version of a Father's Day, if I'm not mistaken. Took in a little Twins and Bronx Bombers, right?
I did. We won't go too in-depth for your sake, Jacob, but I'll just say I had a great time with my son, the second time taking him to a Twins game, and they got to run the bases afterwards. So that was actually a lot of fun because he was following along very well. Now, when we play in the backyard, which is all the time, by the way, Jacob, you'd be so proud. Uncle Jacob would be so proud of JJ because all he ever wants to do is play baseball in the backyard. Every time he hits the ball, he has to run the bases, which is good. I just don't think he understands the concept of a base path. So he tends to run from home to second to third to the pitcher's mound and then back to home again. So we're going to need to work on that a little bit. So he gets around third. He's doing good because I couldn't go with him. I was videoing the whole thing. So he gets around third. He gets halfway home. He kind of stops. Typical JJ format. You know, he gets ADD at the worst possible moment. Starts wandering over towards the pitching mound. And then one of the marketing people had to run out and kind of redirect him. So he comes back to the base pass, starts running towards home, about to step on home plate. And he turns around like, what am I supposed to do right now? I'm like, oh, my gosh, the work we have to do with this child. But nonetheless, it was a great Father's Day, Jacob. I'm hopeful that you had some good time with your dad as well. Happy belated Father's Day to all the dads out there. And, yes, so glad to be back at it and talking Packers football. There's some good stuff to talk about, and there's some other unfortunate stuff that we can discuss. And then I think we've got kind of a fun guest today, if I don't say so myself.
We do. We do have a guest. That will be Eric Thompson of SB Nation's Daily Northman. He's the Vikings guy, so we have enemy territory. And this is a first. We've never had someone from another team other than the Packers on the show. So that will be a first. Back to the baseball thing real quick. Jason, the only request I have is the same one I gave my cousin when she gave birth to a baby boy this past March. He is now 3 months old, and I am desperately trying to teach him to use his left hand and become a left-handed pitcher for me. So 13 years from now, when he's an outlaw, he will be a left-handed pitcher, and that's what I'm hoping. The other day, he threw his pacifier at me with his left hand, and I couldn't have been more proud. So I hope JJ also figures out a way to use his left hand to throw the ball. As for Father's Day, I also did enjoy myself. I bought my dad's Father's Day present was a shirt. You see a lot of political shirts out and about, Trump, Hillary, Sanders, Libertarian, etc. There's one movement I can get behind, and the shirt says, "Don't bunt 16 and make America rake again." So if you're like me and dislike bunting, baseballswag.com, it's hilarious. I've worn it, and it's been a big hit out at the ballpark. So that's enough about baseball. Let's go into football, and you mentioned some unfortunate stuff. The Al Jazeera America report last fall mentioned Clay Matthews, Julius Peppers, Mike Neal, among others. Mike Neal obviously no longer with the Packers, but Peppers and Matthews are, and they are going to be interviewed on the first day of training camp. So, Jason, I just want to know, what are your reactions to the thought that maybe the Packers might be in trouble with some PEDs?
Well, my reaction is that they're not going to be in trouble. I know that's a bold statement to make because the NFL is going to interview them and these Matthews and Peppers and Neal, which Neal doesn't really affect the Packers anymore, about some of these allegations. This is a front by the NFL, and I think we know this. It's been talked about already. We're not sharing anything that everyone else doesn't already kind of know. The NFL has been under such scrutiny for the way that they conduct their business, everything that happens. You know, the NFL is becoming hoggish, according to Mark Cuban. And then you've got Roger Goodell. Everything he does turns into the wrong way to have handled the situation, the spy gate, deflate gate, and every other gate that's out there. So, I mean, I understand the NFL having to do kind of their due diligence and address this. But I think it might turn into a situation where they come out of it with a little bit more of a black eye than they intended to, because people are going to expect them to take action here. I mean, and we have to remember this media outlet doesn't even exist anymore. So that's not to say that discredits the entire report, but it doesn't look good for that particular publication or for that particular information when the publication comes out. Now, from the fan perspective, it's funny because what sport, Jacob, you know the answer to this, what sport gets hit harder than any other when it comes to steroids and performance-enhancing drugs?
Baseball. It's not close.
And so, yeah, baseball. But yet, you know, football requires the most muscle mass, size, strength, agility, speed to play it professionally. Yet, we just started hearing about this in with regards to football within the last, like, 10 years or so. So I think as fans, and this is, you know, I might be getting a little more on the political side of the take here, but I think as fans, we know that these guys are freakish human beings. We know that humans aren't necessarily meant to be as strong and fast as some of these players are. And there's also a good chance that in order for them to achieve those statures, some of them probably need some help. Yet, we love football. We love the game. I'm not saying that it's okay and that it's not unhealthy, but I think as fans, whether we want to admit it or not, we kind of in the back of our mind just kind of block out the idea that some of these guys might be doing some things to help themselves out along the way, because we love the game and we just want to watch football. We just want to see our favorite sport for a lot of us, or just like to watch football, even if it's not your favorite sport. So I think they'll talk to these guys. I'm not worried. I don't think there's enough evidence here. Obviously, this could snowball and turn into something else, because what happens is they have the initial report come out. They sit down. They talk to the players. Then reporter B comes in and wants his or her 15 minutes of fame. They throw in a unnamed source, and I talk to this and that person. So this could snowball, but my thought is, it's much ado about nothing because of the actual substantial information and evidence that they have, according to what I've read so far. And I think it'll kind of go away and something else will take over and we'll be talking about football again. I don't expect neither Matthews or Peppers to miss any time.
Nor do I, and just to kind of piggyback on what you're saying, there is something about the NFL. You know, I know that I think a lot of people know, and I don't think a lot of people necessarily care that they're using performance enhancers if they supposedly are. I don't think they care if they are or not. I think that, you know, the biggest thing about this is, you know, we've heard about it for the last couple of years that the NFL wants to start moving towards getting testing for human growth hormone, which is one of the main performance-enhancing drugs. And that is, you know, something they've talked about for a couple of years now, and getting testing for this particular PED. And, you know, as we sit here 2 or 3 years later after they got that, it still hasn't happened. And the reason I think it still hasn't happened is because they don't really want it to happen. And I think they don't really want it to happen because they know, and much like Bud Selig in 1998, the, you know, for example, the home run chase when I was a kid, Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, all those guys, these roided up freaks, and everybody, unless they were just naive, because they were willing to be naive, knew that these guys were using some type of performance enhancer, steroids, human growth hormone, whatever, but home runs were up. You could see now that they are down. Bud Selig willingly turned a blind eye to help save baseball. The NFL is a very profitable organization. It's a billion-dollar business, and that is billion with a B. Like I said, I don't really think that the NFL cares too much about this. I don't expect a lot to come from it. Call me naive, call me a homer, whatever you want to do. But I, like you, Jason, do not think that Matthews or Peppers or James Harrison or anybody else named in this report will miss any time. But with that, we're going to move on now because we have a special guest, Eric Thompson of the Daily Norseman, who covers the Vikings. I introduced him a little bit earlier, but he is here now. Eric, can you hear me?
I can. How about, can you hear me?
I can hear you, and it's good to have you here, even if you are a Vikings guy. But welcome to Pulse of the Pack. Eric is with SB Nation's Daily Norseman and covers the Vikings. He'll be with us for a little while. Eric, I want to start, you know, the Vikings obviously last season came into Lambeau Field, won the NFC North title in the last week of the season, and were a chip shot field goal by Blair Walsh away from advancing to the divisional round where they would have faced the Arizona Cardinals, and that's a team they competed with in Arizona. So a bit of a missed opportunity there, because there's a lot of people and a lot of really smart football people that think the Vikings could have competed and maybe potentially won that game. And now you're talking about probably going to Carolina, because I don't think the Packers would have beaten the Panthers. They didn't beat the Cardinals, but they're going to Carolina to play the NFC Championship, and who knows what happens there. So I want to start here. Obviously, a lot of talk this offseason has been about how, you know, it's kind of the yeah, but. Well, the Vikings won the division, but, you know, they're not getting a lot of respect in the media, which I don't fully understand. I have a $20 bet down with one of my friends from this area. I'm in Bears country, obviously, who said the Bears will finish ahead of the Vikings in the standings. I think that's going to be easy money, barring a major injury. But the question I have to start this interview, Eric, is, you know, the Vikings defense, phenomenal. Adrian Peterson, one of the best running backs in football. Their quarterback is Teddy Bridgewater. Now, Bridgewater was one of my favorite guys in the draft that he came out in. At a time, I was making an argument that you could take him number one overall and pass on Jadeveon Clowney and go with him as the future at quarterback. So I am and was a believer in Teddy Bridgewater, but the numbers and such don't necessarily indicate that I should be. So, Eric, tell the people, why should I believe in Teddy Bridgewater this year and beyond as the long-term solution for the Minnesota Vikings?
Well, I think the main part, hopefully, that you'll see Teddy Bridgewater's numbers improve this season is the offensive line. There was no secret that Bridgewater had one of the fewest, if not the fewest, amount of time on average to throw. That offensive line was just porous. There was some key injuries before the season even started. John Sullivan was injured, who actually got filled in for pretty nicely. But the right tackle position was a mess all season, thanks to Phil Oldholt tearing his Achilles in the preseason, and having rookie T.J. Clemmings come in, who, you know, did the best he could, but he played like the fourth-round rookie that he was last year. So I think it started there. It was really tough for him to get much time, and I think a lot of it was that defense that you touched on for the Vikings. I think the game plan really did revolve around the defense-first approach. I think you saw that at that last game in Lambeau. They really leaned on the defense and just kind of depended on Teddy and the offense not to screw it up. And I think it was obviously a winning formula. They went 11-5. They won the division. And thanks for bringing up that Blair Walsh kick. You know, I haven't thought about that in a couple weeks. So, but it's a kind of a make or break year, I would say, for Teddy, because I think he's kind of going to be out of excuses. His third year, he's had plenty of time now under his belt. He's been the starter for almost two full seasons now, and has to be an improved offensive line. They brought in a couple people, and they have the injured people back, so there should be not only depth, but a lot of improvement along the line. Adrian Peterson is even actually trying to chip in with actually being a three-down back this season, so it'll be interesting to see, but I think that's going to be the thing that separates the Vikings from the rest of the division this season, if Teddy Bridgewater can take that next step and, you know, get numbers where you could actually maybe think about starting him in fantasy football.
Eric, you mentioned, you know, the Vikings winning formula, run the ball, play defense. You know, there was a stat that Dak Cruz threw out there. It was like they were 9-0 or something along those lines when Peterson touched the ball 20 times and Bridgewater had under X amount of attempts or something like that. I'll have to look and see if I can find that. But, you know, basically running the ball and playing defense. And you mentioned they won 11 games. They won the division. And, you know, also, as I mentioned, they were within, you know, really a kick that Blair Walsh makes 9 out of 10 times from beating the Seattle Seahawks in the playoffs. And the Seahawks are the two-time defending NFC champion. That's not exactly a cupcake opponent in the first round that the Vikings were really that close to beating. But the question I have, and it's going to sound weird, you're talking about, you know, Adrian Peterson wants to be on the field more, third down back, something that in general just kind of drives me crazy with these young quarterbacks is these people kind of have this mentality of, you know, bring them along slowly and still, you know, kind of protect them, run the ball, let them manage the game, things of that nature. And, you know, like you said, it did work for the Vikings, but you can kind of see the final four teams in the NFC this past year. Cam Newton, I know the Panthers are a run-first team, but they really are based around their quarterback. Russell Wilson, right. Same thing in Seattle. Carson Palmer in Arizona, and obviously Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. Is it better this year for the Vikings to actually give the ball to Adrian Peterson less and let Teddy Bridgewater progress as a quarterback?
I think that it's, especially in certain situations, they became incredibly predictable, especially on kind of the first and second down. You know, that was kind of the Vikings fans, you know, it was like, okay, here comes a run, it's first and 10. Okay, you know, second and 7, here comes a run. You know, then try to make a third manageable and then have a quick short pass. And it was frustrating just for Vikings fans when, you know, when 95% of the stadium thinks they know what's coming, and I'm sure the defensive coordinator thinks they know what's coming, and then it actually does. It's a little frustrating. So I think getting Adrian Peterson, you know, it's not so much getting Adrian Peterson the ball less, it's mixing it up when he does get the ball. I think that getting him the ball in a little more space rather than just trying to run him through the tackles has to be something that the offense tries a lot more this season. And I think using him and Jerick McKinnon, who is kind of a really undervalued running back. I don't think he's an every down back, but he's definitely a good change of pace. If he can get him and Peterson on the field a little more together, have, you know, either split backs or have McKinnon out in the slot just to kind of keep the defense off, just keying in on Peterson, I think that'll be a big help for the offense this season.
Eric, it's Jason. Thanks so much for coming on. Eric Thompson of the Daily Norseman. So before we move along a little bit further, I want to give you a second to kind of tell our fan base, because I know a lot of them are also interested in what's going on around the division, a quick minute to just talk about what you do, some of the work that you do for them, where they can find your work, and then also your Twitter handle or any other way on social media that they might be able to follow you.
Sure. I am available on Twitter at Eric_J_Thompson. Just a beautiful long Twitter handle when you have a really common name and you didn't join Twitter right away. That's what I have to deal with. But you can find all my work on DailyNorseman.com. That's part of the SB Nation network. The Packers blog there is the Acme Packing Company. So if you're familiar with their work, we're the same kind of template, just talking about much less favored team, I think, than the other blog you're talking about. But it is good. We know we're doing a lot of – it's definitely the doldrums of the off season. We're running through kind of a top 30 of the Vikings players that we anticipate heading into the 2016, kind of the 30 most important players. We're doing that actually with a couple other Vikings blogs as well. And, you know, just kind of the news and notes, and we're getting closer and closer to training camp. And it sounds like, once again, I'll be heading down to Mankato to check out training camp in person for at least 4 or 5 days, up till the night scrimmage they usually hold at Mankato. I'll be covering that as well. And it actually does sound like there might be only one or two more years in Mankato since the Vikings agreed to the new facilities in Eagan starting in 2018. I think that's when the Vikings deal goes to, because I think the Packers are the only other team that has a longer kind of affiliation, ongoing affiliation with their training camp town. That, you know, a lot of the teams are kind of going towards the just the local training facilities, because that's they want to stick around and have their state-of-the-art equipment right there for them. So I think that is going to happen with the Vikings. So it might be just the Packers having their local training camp the longest. But that's where you can find me on Daily Norseman. It has been the off season for me as well. I haven't been cranking up the articles necessarily, but as the season and training camp get near, you can definitely look for a lot more material from me.
Yeah, and we certainly understand the off season. It's one of those challenges to continue to find relevant topics to talk about. I mean, there's only so many positions on the field, position battles taking place within the team that you can talk about so many times. You know, as Packers fans, we're fortunate to have a guy like Jeff Janis on the Packers roster, because you can always write stories about Jeff Janis and get about 1,000 comments thereafter. So hopefully the Vikings have an equivalent, someone of that nature, and someone that can keep your storybook full. So, you know, I wanted to ask you about the defense, because we touched on it a little bit, but this is one of the more underrated defenses in the NFL. And they proved that last year by being able to help the team stay competitive, win the division, and really should have advanced in the playoffs. It's a, you know, pretty big deal, even though they were at home in the weather conditions. But to hold Russell Wilson and that Seattle offense in check the way that they did, talk a little bit about, I mean, we know the defense is good and who some of the players are, but how close are they to being an elite defense? Let's say top 10 for sure, because I think that they will be regardless, but are we looking at a defense that could, by the end of this season, be like one of the top 5 that we're talking about?
Absolutely. I think they are just probably about a piece or two away, or just a guy or two stepping up away from being one of the elite, if not the most elite defenses in the league. I think it starts with the coaching. Obviously, Mike Zimmer is a defensive first guy. That 2013 season with the last one with Leslie Frazier kind of was the last straw. It was just the epitome of that, Frazier's tenure, who I thought is and was a pretty decent defensive coordinator, but just under his leadership, you could just tell they weren't closing games, and there was just a lot of mental mistakes, and you kind of wondered about that cover two scheme that they leaned on too much. But since Zimmer's taken over, it's been absolutely as billed under him. He's really gotten the most out of his players, and he has his philosophy. He has the kind of guys that he likes. He likes rotating the defensive line a little bit more and getting a lot of bodies in there, and I think he's proven that with the depth of the defensive line has. With Danielle Hunter coming on last year, the rookie defensive end, I think he's going to challenge Brian Robertson's starting spot this coming season. Obviously, Everson Griffin is one of the best defensive ends in the league. Linval Joseph might be one of the most underrated defensive players in the NFL, I think. He's one of, if when he's on and he's healthy, he is just an absolute terror at defensive tackle. And Sharif Floyd, his counterpart at defensive tackle, young guy who's really improved each year, and I think he'll make another step forward this year. Another one that barely ever gets talked about, because he's a backup, is Tom Johnson, the guy that used to play for the Saints. He is, I think, on almost, I'd say, over half the NFL teams, he would be a starter. He's that good. He's just a disruptor. He can get in the backfield really well. And I think with the linebackers, we still have Chad Greenway, who is, I think, more of a – I doubt he's going to be as much of an impact as he has. You know, he's been a stalwart for the defense the last 10 years, but I think it's really – this is the season that players like Eric Kendricks and Anthony Barr really step up. And Barr has been one of the better players, better young players in the league. You know, taking him ninth, a lot of Vikings fans kind of rolled their eyes at that, thought it was kind of a stretch for him, but he's really lived up to the billing. Kendricks is old college roommate from UCLA. It looks like he's the future middle linebacker. I think the one spot of the Vikings defense right now that still kind of isn't settled is that safety across from Harrison Smith. I think right now Andrew Sandejo is kind of the starter by default, who got a kind of a surprisingly big contract extension this offseason. He's really good against the run, but against the pass, he hit his own players, I think, a little more than he did opposing players. So if they can figure out a solution there, I know Anthony Harris kind of came on at the end. He's my personal favorite. I hope he can prove himself and get the starting job, but there's a couple other options they have there. But otherwise, you know, Xavier Rhodes on the outside, Captain Munderland had a much improved season at that slot corner. Trey Waynes has a year under his belt. Obviously, his rookie season was a little bit of a disappointment because he didn't see much of the field, but I think it was more of a testament to the strength of the cornerback that the Vikings did have. So, and you know, Terrence Newman, who was 108, I think he had, he was just a surprise that whatever fountain of youth he was drinking from, hopefully he can find that again. So it really is from top to bottom a very impressive defense, and you couldn't ask for a better guy in charge of it. And I think that's there. If they stay healthy and they can fill that hole or two that they do have, it's going to be a really scary unit.
Eric, it's kind of funny. I actually met Mike Zimmer last year after the final game at Lambeau Field. And, you know, you're talking about a perfect guy to run their defense. And usually, you know, people think of, like, defensive coordinators, and you're looking at Buddy Ryan, Rex Ryan, guys like that who are kicking and screaming and all that kind of crap. And Mike Zimmer at least struck me as very soft-spoken. So that was interesting, at least to me. Not that that makes him a worse coach or anything like that. I think he's one of the top coaches in all of football. And I think last year, people finally started to see that, but that was just a little story. The question I have for you is, you know, you mentioned the defense, and obviously that defense starts with Harrison Smith. And in my opinion, since Ndamukong Suh has left the division, there's really a conversation between three guys for who is the best defensive player in the NFC North. Harrison Smith is in there. I would put him at the top of that list. And the other two, at least in my estimation, unless I'm forgetting somebody, and please feel free to tell me if I am, but the other two are Packers, Clay Matthews and Mike Daniels, defensive linemen. So tell us about the value that Harrison Smith gives that defense, and is he, at least in your estimation, the best defensive player in the NFC North?
Well, I think Smith is that contract where he was, you know, on average the highest paid safety in the NFL. I think he earned every single penny of it, even though, you know, if salary cap hit, I think he's only like fifth or sixth, which is another testament to how the Vikings, you know, even with their big contracts there, they seem to be pretty team friendly. But Smith, the player, if he is really everything you could ask for in a safety, he is completely outstanding against the run. He can play that center field role when he drops back into pass protection, and he just has really good instincts. I mean, he's not perfect, no defensive back is. I mean, he has been beaten deep a couple times here and there, but for majority of the plays, he is really just an outstanding defensive player. There's not too much you can really pick apart with his game. And like I mentioned, you know, that safety spot opposite him has been a weak point for a while now, and it definitely was last season. And he can just cover so many of the mistakes that other player has been that does. So it's, you know, Clay Matthews definitely gets the headlines. He has the commercials. He has the hair. But for my money and my completely very biased, obviously, opinion, I wouldn't take any other player over Harrison Smith in the division for sure on defense.
So speaking of the division, Eric, a lot of the initial talk, as tends to happen every year, is who's the favorite to win the Super Bowl? Who are going to be the top five teams in the NFL this season? We know the Patriots are usually among that conversation. You still have Denver, Carolina, for example, Arizona, teams that went far into the playoffs last year. But it seems like Green Bay is, again, the easy favorite in the North, and they have the good odds to go back to a Super Bowl championship. And it's almost kind of like everyone just kind of glosses over and forgets how last season ended. Now, I know that it could have gone either way. That last game of the season was for the division. So, of course, you know, in Green Bay being at home, there was a good chance that they could have won that game. I mean, they had their chances. They didn't get it done. But do you feel, in just covering the team and looking at it, you know, maybe from a, I mean, you know, I know that you support the team, but from an objective standpoint, that people are sleeping on the Vikings, they're overlooking them, or do you think they should be the favorites in the NFC this year, either because they just should, or if only by virtue of the fact that they won last year and they're the incumbent?
Well, I think it should definitely be between Green Bay and Minnesota. I think those two separated themselves as the class of the division last season. I know the Bears have made some nice moves. I think they'll be a better team. The Lions, they're still the Lions. I think you know they have some good pieces, but you know, losing Megatron, losing a couple of their pieces on defense, I don't see them making that leap and competing for the division. And it really comes down to I understand why the Packers are, you know, they're the Vegas favorite to win the division. You know, Vikings aren't too far behind them. Their odds are pretty decent to win it too, but the Packers are probably still the division favorites because they have number 12 on their center. That's Rodgers is just a step above everyone, you know, almost everyone else in the league. And he's a very large step above Teddy Bridgewater. Hopefully Bridgewater can close that gap a little bit, but I think, the return of Jordy Nelson, I think that really hamstrung the Green Bay offense more than I think a lot of fans, I know myself, anticipate. I know Jordy was an important part of that offense, but it really just seemed to throw everything else off kilter for that offense. So having him back, I understand. And, you know, as a lifelong Vikings fan, it feels weird to have to read all the respect that the Vikings actually are getting. You know, they're kind of the sweetheart sleeper team heading into this season, and it kind of feels odd for us Vikings fans. They're like, no, just be quiet. Don't jinx it for us. We know we think we're going to be pretty good, but we don't want the national media doing that because it seems like, you know, maybe it's just the history and all the evidence of Minnesota sports over the years, but it seems like every time that our hopes get up, that's when they get crushed the most. So we just kind of want to coast behind the scenes. If the Packers want to be the favorites and have all the eyes on them to take over the division, maybe the Vikings can just sneak up at the end and take it again. That would be fine with most of us, I think.
Except for us, yes, of course. But so we'll we'll see how it pans out. But I definitely think that there's a rivalry that's building momentum. It's always been there, of course, because they're divisional opponents, but building up. And the Packers were tapped to open Minnesota's new building this season in U.S. Bank Stadium, Sunday Night Football. So that's going to be an interesting one for sure. And with my living in the local area here now, I definitely get my fair share and my fill of Vikings fans. So, it's interesting because there's a lot of, you know, I think this, and it goes for Minnesota sports in general, there's a lot of this cautious optimism because of what Minnesota has, the Vikings have done over the past couple decades. You know, they've sprinkled in some success. You had the you know, 1998, which was an awesome season with Moss as a rookie, and then the Randy Moss and Dante Culpepper years where they were always in the playoffs and, you know, creating the magic that they had on offense. And then you get Brett Favre reinvigorated for a couple last seasons of his career, and, you know, they get to the NFC Championship game. But that getting over the hump, you know, as far as the fans are concerned, always kind of lingers in the back of their mind, yet the Packers are their most hated rival. So from your perspective, bantering with Packers fans, and this is kind of, you know, kind of a timely question because I know that you and I have exchanged some back and forth on Twitter, which is all in good fun, of course. You know,
oh, yeah.
It's all in good fun, and I think it's what makes the rivalry fun as long as it's done in a respectful manner. But give us kind of the insight into your side of it and maybe the perception of Packers fans. I mean, you can't throw them all into one bucket. Obviously, there's going to be some that are crazy and irrational, and then you're going to have some that, you know, try to outsmart you and you know, want to question you as a writer or, you know, with some of the things that you do. But how do you see it? And is it, I mean, is it something that you kind of enjoy during the season, or is it something that just kind of gets annoying? Social media kind of, you know, you get a lot of bravado that's, you know, they're protected by the anonymity. So how do you see that?
Well, I think it is all in good fun, and it's the part of being a Minnesota sports fan is that a lot of fans of other teams, especially teams like the Packers, can always just lay that trump card whenever they want, and like, how many Super Bowls we got? And then, you know, there really isn't much of a comeback you can do with that, but it happens between all fans, and it's especially on social media, like you pointed out, you know, I think that anonymity kind of gets people, you know, the quote-unquote internet muscles, and they want to, you know, say all sorts of things. And of course I have definitely, I'm not guilt free of any of this either, because I will definitely take my unfair pokes at Packers fans and generalize them as well. But it's back and forth. It's fun. That's part of being an NFL fan. Does it cross the line sometimes? Sure. It does. You know, it doesn't. I also realize it's just Twitter. It's just football. It's just, and I'm just a blogger that has, you know, a few thousand followers that, you know, I like to spout my opinion. So I know that if I took everything personally, I would never make it out, you know, alive, especially with Packers fans. But it is, at the end, it's all good fun, and it does really intensify the rivalry. You know, it's great that it's a perfect setting to open up the U.S. Bank Stadium with hosting the Packers on national TV, you know, when both teams are, you know, that game, you know, the very first game at the stadium could go a long way towards deciding who the NFC North champion is in 2016. So it is, you know, I don't think a lot of Packers and Vikings fans will admit it. I think it is based in a little bit of respect. I think now, especially because both teams are, I think, very good, you know, two of the better teams in the NFL right now. So it makes the rivalry really fun. It's, even though, you know, it can get nasty here and there, but overall, I think with the proximity of the two fans, you know, there's a lot of Packers fans that live in Minneapolis, you know, there's a few that live over in Wisconsin too. So it's fun to go back and forth. And it's definitely different with Packers fans, but that's what kind of makes the rivalry more intense on both sides.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And for those, and I was going to say, didn't mean to cut you off, Jacob, but I was going to say that, for those of you who don't follow Eric on Twitter, first of all, you should. And secondly, you've got to take a look at and appreciate the pinned tweet at the very, very top, because it's kind of the epitome of what I've experienced with Vikings fans and Minnesota sports fans. And, you know, now that I'm a local here, with the exception of the football team, I can get behind another championship of some kind coming home here, because this city loves their teams. I think they've just seen so many things go awry that just take a look at Eric's pinned tweet and you'll understand what I mean. But Eric, I want to thank you so much for coming on. I think as the season moves along, we would definitely love to have you back on if you've got some time. So thanks again. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, guys. This is a blast, and it's always fun to pass the time in the very middle of summer when no actual football news is going on. It's good to talk some football to see that we're getting close day by day. You know, just in a couple months we'll actually be talking about real at least preseason football, so it's fun to be on.
Eric, appreciate having you on. I gotta say, I'm somebody who grew up in Bears country, but by far my most hated team is the Minnesota Vikings, and that's because of some of the stuff you've mentioned. You know, in my childhood, the Bears were kind of a punchline, and the Vikings were always the team that gave the Packers the most competition. And I'm a firm believer that a rivalry is not a rivalry if the other team does not win. And the Packers have had a lot of success against the Bears, and it's been a lot more even against the Vikings. But for a Vikings guy, you're not so bad. So Jason and I both extend the invitation. If you ever would like to come back, we can talk Packers-Vikings whenever they come into play this year. So thank you for coming on, and we hope to hear from you soon.
All right. Absolutely, guys. Thanks again.
All right. That is Eric Thompson of the Daily Norseman. Minnesota Vikings discussion, and that is enough of that filth, at least in my opinion. Good discussion about the Packers and Vikings. Like I said, I really do think that is a two-horse race this year in the NFC North, and I think that that's Something we'll talk more about when we do our schedule breakdown show, all those kinds of things. Really looking forward to that first game at the new stadium in Minnesota, where hopefully the Packers can come in and ruin the new stadium for the Vikings. But, you know, Jason, this is a Packers show, as I say several times, so let's talk Packers. The Packers, since we've been gone, have had their mini camps, their off-season activities, things of that nature. And you mentioned the guy that I want to lead off with because, well, nothing quite drives the needle quite like Mr. Janus Christ. That would be Jeffrey Janus. And, you know, there's been a lot of stories written about him, about how, you know, Davante Adams coming into a big season because he didn't play that well last year. And now there's a pretty big perceived competition as to who is going to be the third wide receiver. Janus was catchy. He was getting behind guys. You know, we know he can use his speed, but he's getting behind guys like Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, Demaryius Randle. He's not exactly beating, you know, some random guy from who gives a crap state. You know, he's beating the Packers starting defensive backs. He's catching the ball. He's also having some drops. Davante Adams, kind of an up and down camp. Everything I've read has said that, you know, Davante looks like a third receiver option, second receiving option, which is kind of what they drafted him to be. But this is the competition. You know, I mentioned, I wrote a story for Today's Pigskin recently about Ty Montgomery's value to the offense. And most of that value, at least in my opinion, comes in the backfield and out of the slot. So that really leaves an opening at the other outside receiver spot, because obviously we know if Jordy Nelson's healthy, he's the number one receiver on the boundary. If Randall Cobb is healthy, he's the top receiving option in the slot. The other slot receiver is either going to be Jared Cook if the Packers go to their 11 personnel at the tight end position, or Ty Montgomery if they go four wide. So the competition on the outside really does, at least in my opinion, boil down to Jeff Janus against Davante Adams. I know Jared Aberderis has done some good things. The team likes him, and he's supposedly added some weight to his frame, which may help some of his durability issues. But reality is, you know, Davante Adams was picked in the second round for a reason. He's not a bad player, and I really think you're going to see that this season, which kind of gives way to some of my opinion. Jeff Janus has all the measurables in the world, but like I said, we know he can run really fast. We know he can run a drag route. The question is, can he run a slant? Can he run a post? Can he run a comeback? Can he run a corner route? Jeff Janus' big thing is the same as, and I wish we had asked him now that I think about it, is, you know, Cordarrelle Patterson in Minnesota. And Cordarrelle Patterson obviously was a first-round pick, but he's really only been able to make a contribution on special teams because he can't run a route. And that's kind of the thing that Janus has done here. He can't really run a route, and that means he's a ace on special teams, which is great. But, you know, fans obviously want him to play in the offense. They love him, and there's some reason for that. He had a big playoff game. His first time of extended action, whenever he's on the field, whether it's preseason or regular season, he just seems to find a way to make plays. You know, there was a big play against the San Diego Chargers where Rodgers flipped him the ball and Janus just kind of went for a little run, and it was a big play in that game. You know, and then the playoff game, obviously, 7 catches, 145 yards, 2 touchdowns. Everybody's talked about that, but the other thing is those numbers, at least in my estimation, do not tell the whole story, because two of his biggest plays were a wing and a prayer. You know, the 4th and 20, Rodgers throws out of his own end zone, he finds Jeff Janus. And then the Hail Mary, obviously, we know about. But those aren't plays that you're going to see when the Packers run their regular offense. So it's just not how offense in the NFL works. Jason, what's your take on Janus v. Adams?
Well, it's an interesting question, because I was just listening to some of the Green and Gold Today shows from last week, and then Jason Wilde came on one of the, I think, the Pottawatomie football show. And you have to remember that the two aren't mutually exclusive, so it's possible that they could both have great seasons and both be part of the roster. I like what I'm hearing, and I like what I'm seeing with regards to Janus. I think that wake-up call that the Packers got at the end of last season was like, hey, you know, maybe we're not using this guy as much as we should on offense. He's a great special teamer, but he needs to get some time on offense. His physical, you know, stature, I think, warrants it. One of the problems that the receivers had last year, once Denver cracked the code, and it kind of started with San Diego, too, to an extent, is jamming these receivers at the line and being able to get off the line. Well, Janis has the physical presence and ability to do that with his size. So he definitely needs to be getting more opportunity. As far as Adams, I'm one of those that thinks that Devontae Adams is going to bounce back. Now, last year, you and I were talking about Tay Adams as the potential team MVP. I mean, I don't think that we were alone either. I think there were so many people that thought that he was going to have an incredible 2015. I don't think that enough attention is being given to some of the injuries that he had. And I know that sounds like making excuses because it was an ankle problem that he had. And then, of course, he had a knee issue at the end of the season and end of the year. And that doesn't cause you to drop the football necessarily. I mean, it might be on your mind, but it doesn't affect your hands. So there was an issue there. I mean, he had 93 targets last year. And so as for as many balls as he caught and touchdowns as he scored, it was just way too low of a percentage. So let these guys go at it. The wide receiver position is going to be the best battle in training camp. They're talking about the possibility, and by they, I guess I should say it's really more the fans than anyone else, because that are talking about the possibility that the Packers keep seven, because seven receivers means, you know, short at another position. Now, a lot of people have said, well, they can do it if they only have two active quarterbacks and one fullback. They carried two fullbacks last year. They kept John Kuhn and Ripkowski. It doesn't look like John Kuhn's going to be back right now, and it doesn't sound like they're going to have a third quarterback. So it all comes down to what they prefer to do. I mean, I think you look at Trevor Davis, who wasn't part of Jacob, but Trevor Davis is a fifth rounder. Well, the Packers haven't cut or put a, you know, not kept a fifth rounder or above on the roster since 2009. So recent history would indicate that Trevor Davis is going to be on this team as well. So, you know, right now, I think just by virtue of the fact that the vets have had that time off and it's been more Hundley in practice, and I think he just has more time with Janis, I'm hearing more about what Janis is doing in practice and more about what Devontae Adams is not doing. But the padded portion of the activities this offseason hasn't started, and that's what's going to kick up in about three and a half weeks here, and that's when we'll really start to know what's going on between these two guys. I mean, right now, at this present moment, I would say Janis has a leg up, but again, one doing well doesn't necessarily mean the other one does not have to do well, and one making the team does not necessarily have to mean that the other is not. Hopefully they both bust out, because that would be the best-case scenario for the Packers.
Absolutely, and I know there's been discussion about seven wide receivers making the active roster, the 53-man when they break camp, and I just really struggle to see that, because it really means, you know, they're short at other positions, and, you know, that can mean less defensive backs, less fullbacks. You know, you're talking about there's ways they could do it, but I just think it's more of a waste of resources if they do that. I think that the Packers' offense will be fine. And really what you're talking about then is you have seven receivers on the roster. They better be able to play special teams, because, you know, you're looking at seven guys on the roster. Typically five are active on game day at the most. And, you know, now you're talking about two active roster spots for the 46 on game day and other things like that. I just really struggle to see a seventh wide receiver making the roster. The other bit of news that was interesting coming out of training camp, or excuse me, not training camp, that's next month, OTA's mini camp, is the progression of Blake Martinez. And now, you know, it's kind of hard to tell how a linebacker is progressing when there's no pads on, but supposedly he's doing some good things, picking up the defense very quickly, which is, you know, Packers fans are going to put a lot of pressure on this kid early on, because he plays the position that really has been the Achilles heel of the Packers defense. That's why they moved Clay Matthews back inside. And now that they've moved him back outside and didn't, you know, address the position early with a guy like Reggie Ragland or Darren Lee or somebody along those lines, they didn't have a chance to pick Lee, but, you know, Miles Jack is another guy that they could have picked with their selection in the first round. But, you know, they didn't address that position early. They went for Blake Martinez in the fourth round. And this is a guy who, at least early, I think, is going to overtake Joe Thomas's role as the coverage linebacker. But, Jason, what do you think about, you know, the trio that the Packers have right now of Sam Barrington, Jake Ryan, and Blake Martinez? What do you think eventually, as this season progresses, happens with those three guys?
Interesting question. So I guess we'll start with Blake Martinez. The hope is that he can crack that dime linebacker position. And I'm all for it because Joe Thomas did okay, but he's not that big. And I think they need somebody with a little bit more of a presence in the middle there. Barrington, you know, you and I happen to be at Sam Barrington's, you know, arguably his best game as a Packer, which was against the Patriots in 2014. He played well. And I remember at one point in that game, you know, he's not a cover linebacker, but I remember at one point they split the running back out wide in motion. Barrington's out wide covering him, and I'm just screaming from my seat. And I'm, you know, I'm sure Dom Capers heard me up in the press box that, you know, hey, you got Barrington one-on-one on a running back. What's going to happen here? So we've been looking for that more athletic guy that can help in coverage. And I think we would classify Barrington as more of a thumper, which is good. You need both. So I'm excited to see Barrington come back. I hope that he comes back strong and can lock down one of those inside linebacker spots in the base. And then if Blake Martinez can crack the lineup in that dime package, I mean, I Jake Ryan is going to be the incumbent other inside linebacker, and I'd like to see him also take a step forward. I mean, he showed some improvement and was able to finally unseat Nate Palmer after 6 weeks, although I think it should have happened after like two or three. But they've got some young guys, and I think if all of them can do their role, play their roles and complement each other well, then that means good things for their progression. It means good things for the Packers because they're still on rookie deals, and so they're not breaking the bank quite yet. And you get Clay Matthews back outside more. So that's the hope. But we haven't heard much about anybody else except for Blake Martinez, and that's because a lot of the veterans haven't practiced. Sam Barrington, as far as I know, I don't think has participated in much of anything. And when you're not participating in its shorts and shirts and helmets, then that's a little bit of a cause for concern. But I think the Packers are also taking a very cautious approach this year after what they went through last year with health injuries or health, the health situation. So I need to see more. I'm looking forward to the preseason because now that I do more, we do these shows and I do more writing, is I like to look at the rookies and see how they look out there. I mean, how do they actually look? Do they look big? Do they play bigger than their stature? Do they look fast on tape and those types of things? And Blake Martinez is definitely a guy I'm going to be watching and on the coverage side because I want to see just how good he is in coverage. And that's something that we'll get to see. You know, I mentioned that with regard to the receivers. Well, we'll really start to see what's going to happen once they get the pads on in training camp. Well, on the defensive side, none more important time than that because obviously defenders need the equipment to do what it is that they do. So I'm looking forward to it, but I think they're going to be in pretty good shape there. And I think that the team is probably going to give Martinez every opportunity to man the inside and to kind of grab one of those spots. I mean, if he ends up unseating one of the other guys, then it's a good problem to have because here comes the younger guy and he'll be able to man that position for a long time. I just want to warn and remind Packers fans, yes, you're going to see number 50 out there in the middle of the defense, but do not panic. It is not A.J. Hawk, the Redux, and hopefully we're looking at a much speedier number 50 this time around.
Amen to that one as far as the linebacker position goes. Jason, one other name we heard a lot of scuttle about in the minicamp is Ladarius Gunter. Gunter made the team last season as an undrafted rookie, which Packers seem to keep one or two every year. He played corner out of Miami, which brings comparisons to Sam Shields, even though they're not even remotely the same player because Gunter fell out of the draft because he can't run, whereas Shields fell out of the draft because he was playing a completely different position and had only played cornerback for 1 year. But the thing about Gunter that I think is interesting is something the Packers were doing, and you kind of have to read between the lines a little bit, but the Packers were bumping Demaryius Randall into the slot a lot and moving, you know, they had Gunter on the outside with Sam Shields when Shields was there, which brings me to the question, Jason, is if this guy develops, if Gunter can play outside corner, you know, you're going to have to do some things to kind of protect him, help him over the top because he's not going to be able to run with your elite speed guys. But if this guy can play outside, the Packers have him in Shields, and in nickel, you're talking about Gunter, Shields, Randall, and then in dime, you're talking about Gunter, Shields, Randall, Rollins. which to me at least is a far more athletic group than the dime group that included Micah Hyde last season. This is no disrespect to Micah Hyde. I think he's a good football player. Does a lot of things well, but doesn't do anything great. I think this is a big thing for the Packers if they can get this guy to develop and be an adequate starting outside corner on this defense, because then you get a lot more athletic in the middle of the field. And Mike McCarthy's talked about it a ton this offseason, how the middle of the field is wide open. And I really think that you're going to see that with the Packers' offenses. They're going to try and attack the middle of the field with Randall Cobb, Jordy Nelson, Jared Cook, among others. But then on defense, I think they're going to be focused on stopping the middle of the field. And now you're adding those four corners in dime with Ha-Ha Clinton Dix and Morgan Burnett, and you're bumping a guy who's played a lot of snaps like Micah Hyde into a reserve role. That's a lot of quality depth that the Packers can have in the secondary. So, Jason, give me a quick take that you have on the idea of Ladarius Gunter potentially working his way into a little more playing time this year.
It's a best-case scenario because he showed a little bit last year, had to step in when injuries hit, and he is definitely one of the Packers' guys. They love their guys. They love to develop them. He's the perfect example of a project that turns into somebody who can really contribute. And so far, the buzz that I've heard, I haven't heard that he's making a huge jump or he's looking like a completely different player, but he's someone that the Packers like a lot. I think they're going to give him his opportunities, and with an extra preseason game, which we hate because we don't want to see these guys get hurt, but with an extra preseason game, it's only going to give a little bit more opportunity and more looks for the coaching staff to see what they can do, because I do not want to see, and especially in the Hall of Fame game, I don't even want to see Demaryius Randall, Sam Shields, or Quentin Rollins in uniform if I have it my way. So would love to see more of 36 out there. And let's be honest, if you're a Packers fan and you've been a Packers fan for a while, there has to be a number 36 on defense. It's almost like the defense isn't complete unless there's a 36 roaming around the defensive backfield out there. So I would love to see that. I don't know that it's going to happen. I need to see more, you know, from him in terms of actual game action. I mean, he makes plays in practice, and that's great. He seems to have good instincts, but it's against other competition that is when it really matters. But, you know, Gunter stepping up is huge because the Packers didn't add a defensive back this year. So that basically means they're happy with the stable of guys that they have, and they're expecting them to take a step forward. And I think the three guys most primed are going to be Randall, Rollins, and Gunter. So if Gunter can step up, because let's also be realistic here, history shows that Sam Shields is probably going to miss one or two games this season. He always seems to. So they have to have a contingency plan. I think right now that's Quentin Rollins. I don't think it's Gunter. But who knows? I mean, the training camp could change everything and give us a lot more confidence about the young guy coming in. But, you know, because of the fact that it's – and you've got Goodson, who's has never been a good cornerback, but he's got the suspension. He's going to miss some time. He may not even make the team now. They need Gunter to step up. I mean, we need to see him on the field at some point this season as a reality, Jacob. So, I mean, we're going to probably see it. But to your point, hopefully it's for the reasons of he's earned more playing time and he's really taken a big jump forward. I think that he can. He's got the right attitude. Hopefully he hasn't hit his ceiling.
Hopefully he hasn't, and that is something that'll definitely – I mean, this training camp, I think, is more exciting than a lot of others because you really are looking at some premier positions, you know, wide receiver, guys who touch the ball, defensive backs, guys who keep people from touching the ball, or at least so you hope, linebackers, pass rushers. There's all kinds of good stuff to look at this training camp that starts next month. I am absolutely excited for that. To end today's show, I have to give one little tidbit. If anybody's listening, I kind of told you guys about this show, but if I met you at Waukesha Sports Cards not too long ago when we went out and met Brett Favre, it was nice talking to some of you guys. It was cool to meet some of these people in there. It's a great little place in Waukesha, Wisconsin, so not too far of a drive if you're from Green Bay. It was only a 90-minute trip for me here from Rockford. It was a nice time. It was great to meet the guy that, you know, since I was little, he was a really big part of my childhood. You know, Brett Favre and the Green Bay Packers. That was my thing when I was younger. It's still my thing now. It just doesn't involve Brett Favre anymore because the Packers have Aaron Rodgers, and I could not be happier about that either. But, you know, it was great to meet a childhood hero, shake his hand, tell him thanks for the memories, all that good stuff. And in about 40 days, I don't have a countdown yet, but in about 40 days, I'll be in Canton to see him get enshrined into the Hall of Fame. So I'm very excited for that as well. And that'll also mark the first preseason game of the season because Packers are playing in the Hall of Fame game, which I'm sure they're thrilled about. They've said several times about how they're happy about playing in the Hall of Fame game, a fifth preseason game this year. And I, of course, am saying that bleeding in sarcasm. But I'm still excited. Jason, as you mentioned, you know, get to watch guys like Brett Hundley and some of the rookies and, you know, the hopefuls to make the roster. And that's really the way I figured out a way to enjoy preseason football. No, I'm not going to watch Aaron Rodgers throw the ball to Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb and guys like that. But I am watching, what does Brett Hundley have? And can Jeff Janis make some strides as a wide receiver? Can Blake Martinez become the cover linebacker? Can Kyler Fackrell make some plays on the edge? You know, can Dean Lowry, who's from my hometown, make some plays? Can Kenny Clark become a contributor? You know, there's a lot of things to watch this preseason, which is really, I hope we do a decent job of kind of telling you guys some places to look as far as the preseason and training camp goes, because it is half-hearted football. I get that. It's not, you know, the stars aren't out and about, and you're not going to see bombs to Nelson and Eddie Lacy running guys over and all that kind of fun stuff. But there's still some stuff to watch, you know, some names and guys that you could see maybe making a name for themselves a few years down the road. So that'll be interesting once training camp hits. And that's going to do it for today's show, our first show in a long time. But it was fun to be back. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. You can follow the show on Twitter. We are at Packer Pulse. You can follow Jason. He's at Jason Perrone. And you can follow myself at Jacob Westendorf. Season's approaching. We are going to have more Packer stuff readily accessible because there's going to be more news, which is always good. More football, the better. And thank you to our sponsors, Waukesha Sports Cards and Mark Mayfield. We appreciate everything you guys do for our little media outlet here. Like I said, Waukesha Sports Cards in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Check it out. It's a nice little place. They got some really cool stuff in there and pretty affordable as well. So that's something, if you're ever in the area, give it a look. It's not too far away. It's right across the street from a Green and Gold McDonald's, which is absolutely a perfect location. But it's a nice little place. So check it out. Let me know if you guys go purchase anything from there, if there's anything I should go purchase from there because, well, let's face it. I'm always willing to blow my money on something that's Packers related, and that's just reality. But, Jason, it was good to be back with you guys today. We will be back hopefully sooner this time around if there's more news and such. The dead period in the NFL is almost over. Training camp is a month away, a little less actually, so a little less than a month away. The Green Bay Packers will be back on the field getting ready for hopefully a Super Bowl run in the 2016-2017 season. But thank you guys, as always, for listening to Pulse of the Pack.
Pulse of the Pack Podcast.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.